Welcome back to the PFRPA podcast. I'm your host, Brian DeMarco, and here today with me, I have a legend. I have a legend here, guys. I'm telling you, I'm talking about old school legend, Vince Lombardi era legend, the Packer himself, Dave Robinson. Dave, thanks for hanging out with me today.
Just fine, thank you.
This is awesome. I'm glad you took the time to hang out with us here in beautiful Miami as we're here for the Super Bowl, which is really cool. Yeah. Hey, so let's dig right in. Mm-hmm. I want to talk about just keeping Vince Lombardi's and that era of the Packers, the legend alive. Mm-hmm. I want to dig in a little bit with you, though.
Okay.
So before we get started on that, let's give everybody out there like a brief history on you. Where'd you go to college? What year was it? What year did you get to the Packers? When did you play? Mm-hmm. All that good stuff.
Okay, I went to Penn State. I'm a Nittany Lion.
That's too bad.
Hey, I love it, man. Hey, they're coming back.
I'm
going
a Spartan,
way back.
Man. I have to say, yeah, that.
We kick your butt every year. But anyway, I played for Rip Engel, who was Joe Paterno's predecessor. In fact, he was the one who brought Joe with him as an assistant coach in 1950. And Joe was only going to play for three or four years. And then go about his business. He never left.
So when I was at State, to put that in perspective, right. In, you know, 90 to 94, Joe Pa was the coach of Penn State.
Joe married a girl from my class. I got to Penn State in 1959 in the fall, and I graduated in 63. And so it was an interesting situation. While we were there, the bowl games were all in the South, Southern schools. So you never in a bowl game saw African Americans playing football, and so in 1960, some of the big networks like CBS, in fact, they wanted to get that New York and California audience, and they knew they couldn't keep showing LSU against Alabama all the time, so they went out and they got Penn State to go down, and we integrated the Gator Bowl, and I was the first black to play in the Gator Bowl down in Jacksonville, Florida, and that was quite an experience. I can talk a half an hour on that alone, And then I got to Green Bay in 1963 as the first round draft pick, which was unusual. In the 1960s, it was very unusual for a team to draft an African American in the first two rounds. They always draft in the third round. And as I was told by some people that to justify it was the fact that all the Southern schools were segregated, and Northern schools had a limited number of African Americans. So if you drafted an African American ball player, he probably went to a Southern Blacks college, where he had subpar equipment to work with, subpar, not the best coaches in the league and anything else. So if you draft him, you draft him on the come and had to coach him up for a couple of years before he's ready to play. So that was the excuse for not drafting African-Americans early. Vince Lombardi, who was an Italian, Vince Lombardi, who should have got a head coaching job years before he did, but he always said he didn't get the job because his last name ended in a vowel.
Back then, yeah,
in 1959, when he was off the job at Green Bay, the Wellington Meyer, the owner of the Giants, came to him because Vince was a New York guy. His family lived in Queens. He wanted his dream was to coach the New York Giants. Jim Lee Howe, the coach, is about to retire, and he was hanging on, waiting to see who the replacement was before he accepted the job at another place. And El Wontemara told him, said, Vinny, I'll talk to you like my son. He said, if I were you, I would take the job in Green Bay because New York City in 1959 is not ready for an Italian head coach. He said the next coach of the New York Giants is going to be Ali Sherman. And Vince then left. And his wife told me, he said, as they came into Green Bay, when they're making a final approach, he turned to her and said, Marie, the New York Giants, who, by the way, in 1958, went to the World's Championship game against the Baltimore Colts. They lost in overtime. But a lot of people thought that was the best team in the National Football League, even though they lost to the Colts. Yeah. And he was going to the Green Bay Packers, who in the same 1958 year had won one game, lost 10, and tied one. Everybody agreed they were the worst team in the National Football League. And he said, Marie, the New York Giants will never beat my Green Bay Packers. He never lost to them. Preseason, regular season,
really?
Postseason. He never lost
to him. That may be a factoid, guys, that we need to put into this.
And he was offensive coordinator with Giants. The defensive coordinator for that same Giant team in 1958 was Tom Landry. He never lost to Vince Lombardi.
I didn't realize
Vince coached
that.
For 9 years, and Landry never beat us. He said one exhibition game. That's all. And then that game was kind of funny because we were playing rookies trying to see who was what. was the last exhibition game of the season, and Landry kept his veterans in there the whole way. And then, in fact, when they're winning by about 5 or 6 points with 2 minutes to go in the game, he called timeout on our 10-yard line to kick a field goal. And Vince never let us forget. He said, "Once you got," he showed that film clip every time he played. "So I want to sure continue playing this week." Landry first said that he did that because he wanted to give his kicker some experience. And Vince counted real quick and said, "If you want to give him experience, put him in there against my starters then, not against my rookies." Then he said that it was a salesmanship game and they were trying to sell season tickets in Dallas, and a win against the Packers would go a long way for sell season tickets. That's why he did it. Which I can believe that. But anyway, that was the whole thing.
Wow.
That's how Vince got to Green Bay.
You know, it's funny because, you know, you mentioned Landry in there and being part of that coaching staff. Mm-hmm. And today we talk a lot about Parcells and you know, Belichick, Tom Coughlin, and a bunch of other great coaches. Yeah. But, you know, you don't talk about that too often, some of those great coaches that were on that staff.
Well, in the old days, a coach had to work his way up. He started out, and like Vince Lombardi started St. Cecilia High School and finally worked his way up. Then through college, he was Colonel Earl Blake at Army. He was one of his top assistants and in line to get the job at Army when Earl Blake retired. But his son, Earl Blake's son, was caught up in a scandal, cheating scandal at West Point. And he and all the coaching staff became persona non grata. That's how, and so Vince got passed over for that. That was the reason they gave him. He ended up with the Giants, and he wanted to play in the Giants, and then he got passed over for that. By the way, even though after that, he and Wellington Mara were the best of friends. In fact, Wellington Mara, I guess, was the very first man to call Vince when he knew we were going to Super Bowl I and told Vince that he had to uphold the honor of the National Football League in the very first Super Bowl game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And it put pressure on Vince, and Vince put pressure on us. We had to win.
I'm
not
sure.
To win. We never thought winning was in doubt. No team does.
Yeah.
But we had to win by 3 touchdowns and because we were 19-point favorites. And that was what the hard part was, for us to beat this fine Kansas City team by 3 touchdowns. We ended up winning 35-10. But in my position, I left Penn State, and I went to a college all-star game. You know that game they used to have where the college all-stars played the NFL champions. That year, 63, the Packers had been 62 world champions, so we're playing against the Packers.
Wow.
But and the Packers, your home team calls the people in the all-star game and told them where to play you so they can look at you. So I went down there, and the first week I was there, I was playing defensive end. Next week I was there, I played tight end because I played both ways in college. You had to go both ways in college. I was an offensive end and defensive end.
I can't even imagine that. Like, yeah, just getting through a game. It's a different caliber of player.
You had to go both ways. And what happened, when the game started, there one referee would wear a red armband, one wore green. And let's say you had the green that week, was your man. He'd start the game with a list of every player by number on a sheet. When the game started, he circled the 11 guys who were playing. If you left game and came back in, he drew a line through your circle. You tried to re-enter, it was automatic 5-yard penalty and delay a game. You couldn't substitute. Only come in once during this. Yeah, he had to go both ways. And so it was interesting. Finally they moved me to linebacker, where the defense coordinator had come to me during the offseason, giving me the linebacker playbook. He wanted me to be a linebacker. Yeah. So Vince called me in after I got there, and he told me, our goal in here is to win 3 consecutive world championships. We won 61, we won in 62, we got to win in 63 to make 3 consecutive. No one had won 3 world championships before except the Green Bay Packers in 29, 30, and 31. But those years, there wasn't a playoff system. They instituted a playoff system so nobody could win it 3 years in a row again. And Vince wanted to be the first one to do it. And the 63 was going to be his third year. So he told me, he said, "That is the one goal we have, to win the championship." And he said, "That you'll be the first black linebacker in the National Football League." He said, "But we don't need any distractions. So if anybody asks you about it, you tell them to come see me."
And So 63 is your first year in Green Bay.
Right.
Right. Was that the first championship for the Packers of that era?
No. They won 61 and 62.
Okay.
It was the first loss.
It was the first loss. Okay.
We lost in 63. We lost to the Bears. But I walked out of Vince's office into the locker room, and the guy from the Milwaukee Sentinel, was big paper, and came up to me and said, "What's it like to be the first black linebacker in the National Football League?" And I told him, "I don't know. Talk to Vince." And I never heard another word about it. Vince crushed it. He was that kind of guy.
All right.
Now, a lot of people think that Willie Lanier was the first. Willie Lanier was the first middle linebacker.
Yeah.
But I was the first linebacker, and no one knows that except you, I, and about four other people.
Right.
My wife, my kids,
right.
And my mother. Yeah.
So, 61-62, right. Packers win the championship.
Right.
What is it like coming out of college and entering that team? Because I mean, they were on top of their game,
right?
And here you are, first round draft pick. What was the feeling when you first got there?
Some people think that 62 Packer team was the greatest team of all time. They only had one loss. They lost to Detroit on Thanksgiving Day, the only game. And they always said that the players, Vince never made excuses, the players always said that they had just played a real tough game against the Baltimore Colts, who were the arch rivals of the Packers in those days. Yeah. And they limped in. They had to play Thursday on Thanksgiving. They limped into the game injured, where Detroit played on that Sunday. And they kept half their starters out of the game.
It's hard to do.
They had an easy game. I won't mention the team, but right. They had an easy game. And they came in the game fresh, and Green Bay came in wounded, and they beat the heck out of them. But anyway, so one of the guys, Dan Curry, the left linebacker, he had an article in Sports Illustrated about how to read your keys.
Yeah.
When I was in college, I laminated that article. And like not every game, but I say every second or third game of the season, I reread that article to make sure I was up on how to read my keys and whatnot.
Right.
And he is my hero. I come to camp, and there he is. I'm going against him for the same position.
Yeah.
And so he was left linebacker.
And little did he know that he
I switched to right linebacker. Because the right linebacker, Bill Forrester, was getting ready to retire. And so it was a job over there. And then I got my knee hurt in 64. He had gotten his knee hurt. And Wolfers had bad knees, and it's starting the 65 season. Vince called us both in. I flew in at 10 o'clock, and they examined my knee and then sent me back home. I left about on 11:30. Dan came in at 1 o'clock. They examined his knee. At 3 o'clock, Dan was traded to the Rams because every day my knee was stronger than his. And that's when I realized we're nothing but a piece of meat in the league.
Oh, yeah.
And my wife, who hated cold weather, said, "You and that doggone knee, we could have been in California."
Right?
and so I said, what the heck? But I learned a lot from Dan and from Bill Curry and Bill Forrester. We had 11 o'clock curfew. If you're caught out of your room after 11 o'clock, automatic $500 fine. And in the dorm, all the veterans on the first floor, rookies on the second floor, where every night when after curfew, at 11:30, after they checked us, I would sneak downstairs and go into Bill Forrester's room, and we went over what was covered on the field that day, the defenses, and not just the X and O's, where to go, but why do you do this and why do you do that? He did the theory of the defense, and I learned a lot about through him. Now, in hindsight, I think the coaches knew I was sneaking down because they had to know.
Yeah.
and they knew why I was coming. I was going to Bill Forrester's room and what was going on, because Bill had told coach he wanted to retire, and coach would let him retire because he didn't have a replacement.
Right.
And so Vince was smart like that.
So let's talk about training camp real quick for the Vince Lombardi Packers.
Uh-huh.
What was training camp like in Green Bay?
Excuse my French, it was hell. It was, you know, funny thing about the tilt of the earth in Green Bay in those days, every year in training camp, it went up over 100 degrees. And every year in the winter, it went to minus 20.
Yeah.
It's just the way the earth is, the amount of sunshine you get during those times, because the tilt of the earth. The weather has changed, Durant. They talk about climate change. I can see it in Green Bay. They don't get the real hot summers or the real cold winters anymore. But that's another story. But Vince Lombardi came, and he worked you hard. I mean, we scrimmaged like almost every day. We had 7-on-7 scrimmage, live scrimmage. And then
how many weeks was training camp?
I think it was four or six.
Yeah.
We had six games. We played six games. And we had like three or four games season weeks before. We started in second week in July every year.
Yeah.
And usually the second week in September was the first game. Now, the six preseason games weren't like you can't equate them to what you had today.
Right.
Because they were full-fledged games. I mean, there was no difference in a preseason game and a regular season game, except the regular season game counted your record. I mean, the guys, starters played, and they played the whole game, and they knocked the heck out of each other.
I'll tell you what. So my first year in Jacksonville, 1995, first year of the team, was Tom Coughlin's first year.
Okay.
Right? And Tom's obviously known for being tough, right, and just being that drill sergeant. Well, we had five preseason games that year.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no difference between – it was just as important to win that preseason
sure was
game
five?
As any regular season game. Yeah, five. Yeah, we had the Hall of Fame game. We had the Hall of Fame game, and then we had four other regular preseason games, like most teams
do now. Well, right. We had six. Everybody had six preseason games.
Did you hit that wall your rookie year? Like, so I remember playing those five games,
right?
And then getting to the fifth game of the season, I was feeling like – you know, that was your college season right there.
That's right.
You still had 11 games to play.
we were the rookies, the guys we were at Bonnet, the rookies came in together. And like you said, when we played 10, 11 games in college, when you hit that 10th, 11th game, you said, you know, we're not rookies anymore, man. We just played a whole season.
Yeah, right? It's season two.
Oh, yeah.
In your first year.
And I'll tell you something else, too. The pension plan in the National Football League, it was started in 1959. In order to vest and be qualified for a pension, you had to play 5 years under the plan.
Oh, wow.
So if you played 20 years and retired after 4 years in the plan, you got zero, no pension. You had to play 59, 60, 61, 2, and 3. So 63, all the guys that they read about, the leather helmet guys, they all hung up. They're good guys. They hung around for that last year to get a pension. So I played against guys like Ollie Mattson and R.C. Owens, Joe the Jet Perry, all these guys, these great running backs, Hugh McElhaney, one of the greatest men in that, you know, all those guys stayed around for one last year, and I played against all those guys. And the same way on defense, you know, Neil Nominini, Neil the Lion, all those guys, man.
Oh my gosh.
They all played, and so I really had a real mixture. And these guys, it was the last hurrah. And a lot of them, they knowing that because they were at the end of their career, and they might not play during the regular season, they all played that last exhibition game, and they put rookies in, now they put these old timers, give them one last shot, especially if it's a home game for them.
Right.
And I mean, these guys came at us, and as a rookie, they picked on us. it's like a baptism under fire.
Oh my gosh, I bet. So that's actually a really great transition. We are in our 100th year, the NFL celebration of 100 years, and as we know, you know, this game being built on the backs of those men,
right?
And you know, we do have the CBA coming up soon, and there's a lot of talk about the pre-1993 players and pension parity.
Right.
What are your feelings about that?
There's something has to be done. When I came in the league, I was told that I can get $100 a month for every year of service. So if you play 5 years, you're going to get $500 a month, which wasn't great, but it's not bad. But what happened? Remember I told you the pre-59ers didn't have any pension. If you played 20 years, you didn't get a pension. So rightfully so, they decided to change the pension plan and incorporate them into the pension plan. Our plan is a guaranteed contribution plan, not a guaranteed benefit. The league puts in so much money, and then we get the pension, the benefit that pays for it. But when they brought these new guys in, they didn't bring in with a corresponding contribution. So it watered down for the guy. So as it turns out, if you just played 5 years, it's only $30 a year. You know the pension.
Yeah.
It's not how many years you play, it's which years you play.
Yep.
Every year's got a number. Well, the first 5 years, I have $30 a month. If I'd played just 5 years and retired, I got $150, and that would have been it. So they should have given it to him. But here's something else. The first thing you did when you came in, you got this form from the National Football League, and you had to sign off your right to trading cards. You gave the right to trading cards to Pete Rozelle.
Wow.
Instead of the trading card companies paying each individual player the way it's done today, the whole bunch is sold as a package. And they told us, people will pay for a Bart Starr trading card. They're not going to buy a Dave Robson trading card, so you might as well sign off right here. And that's why you sign off.
And you do it, right? When you're young.
and they sold it for, like, I think it was $575,000, something like that, to Coca-Cola. And that money was the money that went to fund our pension plan. So we really funded our own pension plan. It was money that would have gone to the players,
but instead they
paid the pension plan with it. And that's the thing. So that's what made it even worse. The fact that they and I don't know. I'm not one of the accountants, but somebody had to take a deduction on their income tax for a pension payment.
Right.
I didn't get it. The league must have gotten it. So they took our money, paid for our pension plan with it, and they probably took the deduction on their income taxes too.
Wow.
And now they don't want to give us the money. They don't want to give us an increase.
Well, you know, I just, in my mind at least, in my opinion, I think this this comes down to there's just right and wrong,
right?
And there should be pension parity. And for the pre-93 players, and I know this stat, thanks to Lisa Marie, we're losing about 150 guys a year.
Between 100 and 150 every year. And that's the thing. See, if you do something for the pre-93 guys, it's not a payment you're going to make from now on. It's a finite number.
It's finite.
And in 30, 40 years, where's it going to be? That we're all going to be gone. I hope it's 50 years for me. But
right.
all of us are going to be gone. And I had a plan which is similar that I came up with, and it takes a lot of actuarial work. But I think they need to set a number. If God needs a guy, should have $100,000 a year, he should have $200,000, whatever it is, get that number.
Yeah.
Then every team should take a list of all their players who were pre-93, and then the team take care of them. They put them, maybe put up $2 or $3 million per team per year,
and
the league match it
for these teams. Though I mean, realistically,
and then when the last when the last Packer pre-93 dies, the Packers don't contribute anymore.
Yeah,
and that way. Packer money never goes to fund a Chicago Bear, and vice versa, and the league can supplement, and the league owners have to realize it's only temporary. It's just that as long as he's pre-93. Now I think it's basketball just passed the thing where no matter what the pension plan, what the pension is for a present guy, it goes back to the old time and get the same money. In baseball, I know they have is based on how many years you play.
But in the most brutal, most physically demanding sport the planet Earth,
that's right.
We don't have it.
The one sport.
And we know this too, that this whole pension issue, this doesn't just affect this player. It's not about one guy. This is quality of life for this guy, his wife, his
family, kids.
I mean, it affects so many people. And for relatively speaking, for the league,
right.
A small amount of money, and over a finite period of time, this can be solved, and and the problem can go away.
Here's the big thing against me: when I came in the league in 1963, every team in the league played in either a baseball park or a college stadium with a track around it. Team that had a real football field was the Green Bay Packers, and then we played half our games in Milwaukee, a county stadium, which is a baseball park. When we played the Bears, we played at Wrigley Field, which had a brick wall cutting off the corner of the end zone. The brick wall was still in play. They could run you right into the brick wall, no penalty. and the thing about this, what's so bad about baseball fields, you're playing in the outfield. Not really. Every one of those baseball fields had a pitcher's mound. I never saw it happen, but the rumor was you hit that pitcher mound going full speed, you could break a leg.
Oh, man, I remember out in Oakland.
Oh, yeah.
I remember playing out in Oakland.
That's right.
And they still were playing on that
baseball
diamond.
And when you hit that infield, you started watching how you ran because no one hit that pitcher's mound. And usually some of the teams, when the season was over, baseball season was over, they cut the pitcher's mound down so it would be flat at least.
Yeah.
But if the team was in the playoffs go to October, World Series, that mound was there. And you had to be careful.
I remember I got a few glimpses of that too. My first year in the league, it was the last year for the old Cleveland Browns Stadium.
Oh yeah, okay.
And I remember, I'll be honest with you, I remember going in there to play.
'95
was my first year, and I think that was the last year of that
moved out.
Team.
Yeah.
So I just remember walking into that locker room and thinking to myself, This is the NFL? Like, there was literally just pegs in the wall and a stool. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, how is this the NFL? But that stadium, walking out of there and having to walk up that.
You never played at Metropolitan Stadium in Minneapolis then. And the worst stadium, the worst stadium in the league was the War Memorial Stadium in Buffalo. That was the worst. I think they had like a 40-gallon hot water heater because only the first three guys got hot water in the shower. And they walk up steps to get there. But, here's the thing. Talking about the condition of the stadiums, today, every football team has a multi-$100 million stadium. The last five or six stadiums cost over $1 billion.
Yep.
They got money. These guys are living in lap of luxury, built on the backs of those pre-93 guys.
That's right.
I mean, they can only enjoy this. There's great suites you see on TV and all the things that go along with it. And the helicopter rides here and big limousines. The owners can only afford that because of what guys like you and I did sacrifice. And I can't understand why they don't say, well, let's throw them a little something. Give him some kind of parity. And it's just.
I think that's, you know, there's a lot of hope, I think, for the for this CBA, and I think specifically for these pre 93 guys. Yeah. And like I said, there's just a right thing and a wrong thing. So I think they're going to see the light.
I have no doubt that something's going to be done. But is it going to be sufficient? Is it going to be something that gives us, is it going to be something that we can hold our heads up high and say, yeah, we played in the National Football League and we got, for the rest of our lives, we got taken care of.
And I think that's important. Why the PFRPA, you know, in supporting FAIR, at Lisa Marie Riggins, who's John Riggins' wife,
right, I know.
And that whole program,
right,
of just making sure that we're bringing the attention of these pre 93 players and getting this done in the next CBA is going to be critically important.
Yeah,
so
it's going to be very important.
So, listen, Dave, thanks for hanging out with me, man.
Listen, man,
my
pleasure.
I appreciate it, man.
Okay, yeah. I'll tell you, anytime at all, one talk, I got lots more talk to go.
I can tell, man. You got stories for days, man.
Right.
We could have made a whole podcast series just from your stories, man.
Yeah, well,
it was awesome to hear.
I'll tell you, it's just I can't express the joy. I enjoy the National Football League, first of all.
It may sound like
I'm down on ownership or anything else. You know, I think I was grossly underpaid. I think we were taken advantage of it, Mike. But you know what? If I was offered a chance to go back and do it again, I'd do it again.
Yeah, totally.
I wouldn't even ask for a salary increase if I could do it.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I enjoy it. Every time, every minute I had on the National Football League on the field was a moment of pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Yeah. Well, it's because for those moments where we're all still 22, 23 years old in our minds, right? And that thought of just one more time, of getting out there with the guys and experiencing that.
And nobody can explain the euphoria and how happy and how, the high you get from winning a ball game or a championship, especially. And no one can explain how low you get when you lose a game, just a regular season game or a championship game. And if anything that I miss and see missing in football today, guys don't take losses as hard as we did, because with free agency, you lose to the Bears, you're sad because you lost the game, but next year you might be a Bear. When I came along, you'd never be a Bear.
Yeah, right? that was it.
You're a Packer, man. And when you lost, you let down the whole city, the team, and the state of Wisconsin when you lost the game.
Well, I think at the end of the day, just really, you know, as we all have this great pride in this brotherhood and being a part of something that is so rich in history, is such a great future ahead of it, regardless of what's hit football. It is the greatest team sport on the face of the earth.
And you said something that's very key. I mean, for 60 minutes on the field, you slap and hit a guy and hit him. And when the gun goes off, they used to have guns in the game. You may still taste the blood in the mouth where you're hitting the mouth, but you shake his hands. And some of my best friends are guys who played on the other team, who played against me, guys who were tight ends, and I was a linebacker, who went one-on-one. And I'll just mention one guy, if you don't mind, John Mackey. John Mackey went to Syracuse.
Yeah.
I went to Penn State. We played in the freshman season. Freshmen couldn't play varsity, so we played against each other as freshmen. And for the next 3 years, and he was a tight end, and I was an end too. So that means when we were on offense, John Mackey was the defensive end on my nose. When he was on offense, I was the defensive end on his nose. So we went one-on-one for 3 years all the way through. And then he goes to Baltimore, and I go to Green Bay. And again, Baltimore, Green Bay.
You get to know a guy after all those years, right?
And he was probably one. During the offseason, our wives got to know each other. We hung out together. And either we'd go down to Baltimore or they'd come up to New Jersey. And, you know, it was the camaraderie. When the gun went off, we fought like hell. When it was over, we shook hands. Best of friends. And that's what the National Football League is all about. There's no real hate. Yeah. Unless it's a competitive type hate.
But it's such a brotherhood.
And love, it's a brotherhood.
No matter what the era, that's what I love about doing what we're doing now, is that instant, no matter when you played, there's always a bond between us.
That's right. That
collective experience that we've had. Yeah. So, all right, man, we're gonna wrap this. I appreciate it, brother.
My pleasure.
Awesome.
Thank you.
This was awesome.
Thanks for having me here.